Propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Thank you for joining us today on the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Again, we got a great show for you today. We got David Clues joining us in a bit from England. He's going to talk about Unity News Network. All things basically boots on the ground that I feel like our mainstream media and even perhaps other media sources aren't really giving you really what's going on in England. Pretty apropos time to do so. President Trump in England yesterday, today. So we'll get some sort of inside perspective on Brexit, England, immigration, visiting Trump, and much, much more. So please stay tuned. We'll get into our guest in just a mere matter of moments. But before we do so, please make sure you check out AnomicAge.com, where you can find all things me, all things Anomic Age, past guests, information, how to contact me. Also, you can sign up for the newsletter. Please do that if you haven't already done so. You can download the Android app, the iPhone app, and you can donate to AnomicAge.com. I highly recommend everyone doing that. Sort of jokingly, tongue-in-cheek, said this a few times, but we do need fuel for the ship to keep us sailing. So please make a donation if you can. Make it a monthly donation to the program. I'm working on the Patreon thing. I realize perhaps many of you are going, wouldn't it be easier if you just, yeah, I know it would be. And I'm working on it. Got a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak, and a lot of hats that are primarily being worn by yours truly. So it's a lot. It's a lot going on. But make no mistake about it, we'll be here. So please share the Anomic Age links with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. You can check us out on social media sites, the usual suspects. Primarily I'm on Twitter, but you can also find us on YouTube, Brighteon, and Facebook. I'm working on the Instagram thing too. To be honest, it's a news, political, conspiratorial type show, so I don't know what sort of photographs you might actually expect. I guess I can put photographs of our guests, and that'll sort of jog everyone's memory to say, hey, we got to tune in. They got a show out right now. What are we doing not watching this? Come on. Let's do it. But nonetheless, please check out AnomicAge.com. Share that link. Hit the like button on everything that you can like. Hit the subscribe button on everything that you can subscribe to. And if all else fails, if all those media monopolies try to pull the Anomic Age from your grasps, you can definitely look at AnomicAge.com to find all things Anomic. Let's check out a little news, shall we? We got so much, it's unbelievable. I'm only going to give you a little bit of news today. I've been sort of cutting back on my news segments a bit because we've been doubling up on our guests. But good news is we'll only have one guest, or I guess it's good news. A lot of folks like the two guest format, which is why we may sort of move into Patreon sort of direction sooner than later. But nonetheless, today, and at least for the foreseeable future, we'll have one guest, which means we'll have a little bit more news than we've been having. So if you like the news, good. If not, bad. You know, vice versa and so on. But nonetheless, we got some news for you today. This is coming from humanevents.com. Well, this is good. This is coming from the culture section of humanevents.com. Dodgeball is an unethical tool of oppression, says academics. This week, three education theorists, you're a theorist, will present the premise that dodgeball is miseducative and teaches athletic privilege. Oh, we knew we were going to hear a buzzword. to the Canadian Society for the Study, pinkies out, folks, pinkies out, of education at the Congress of the Humanities and Social Sciences in Vancouver, Canada. How did I know there was a social science link to this poppycock? This is by Sophia Carbone on June 3rd, 2019. The left's most recent addition to the list of things they find oppressive is dodgeball. Yes, the game you played in gym class when you were 12. The National Post released an article earlier today by Joseph Brion explaining how dodgeball isn't just an unethical tool, it's a form of oppression, old boy. And it just goes on to outline how these communist fruit bats are taking aim at something else that is normal to most folks, which would be dodgeball. I love dodgeball. I must say, I guess I was privileged because I was all right at it. I guess it's that white privilege, athletic privilege thing that is so hurtful and oppressive, and I should atone for it. Oh, let the atoning begin. Next article is coming from NewsWars. NewsWars.com. This is from Tuesday, June 4th, 2019. School announces tariff on students not wearing pro-LGBT clothing. Oh, the humanity. Good grief. Extra donations demanded from teens not openly supporting gay transgenders. This is coming from Dan Lyman. An Australian public school, underscore that, landed in hot water after announcing that students not wearing pro-LGBT LMNOP clothing on a coordinated dress-down day would be expected to double their voluntary charitable donations? What a utter bunch of garbage this is. What's this? Grace Stance High School in New South Wales notified pupils and parents that on Rainbow Multi-Day, those not openly participating in International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia would be pressed for increased contributions to the National Youth Mental Health Foundation. So these commie scumbags are basically strong-arming students not going along with their agenda. So it's a strong, it's a mafioso technique. It's much like the old La Cosa Nostra. You need fire insurance, huh? Oh, I'm not going to do fire insurance. Oh, you're going to do fire insurance, or we're going to burn your business down. So, same thing. You're going to participate in the indoctrination campaign pushed by the communists, pushing this LGBT garbage, or you're going to have to, I guess, under their socialist commie guidelines, contribute to the National Youth Mental Health Foundation. I think anybody going along with this bollocks should be checked out by the National Youth Mental Health Foundation, although I surmise that they're probably another commie leftist-leaning bunch of garbage as well. Here we go. DailyMail.co.uk. Let's see if I can actually read the article or if it's just going to keep shoving mess in my face here. Mothers. Oh, wait a minute. Are we saying something sexist here by saying the word mothers? I fear that we are. Mothers could transfer lifelong protection against infection to their children by breastfeeding? Well, right away, this is obviously some very racist stuff going on here. By breastfeeding reveals remarkable study on mice. So these, these bigots are trying to say that mothers I mean, right away you're using some sexist, transphobic language here, because anybody could be a mom. I mean, all it takes is for me to play a little masterful game of Mr. Potato Head, and I too could be a mom, I suppose. But, and then they're saying that mothers breastfeeding could give you lifelong protection against infection. Wow. I mean, I can't even believe these bigots. Researchers at the University of Cape Town found immunity could last years. Immunity was found to be passed on in white blood cells rather than antibodies. I can't believe this science even made the light of the day. I'm sure there was all kinds of people trying to force this underground. The research was done on mice, but it could one day influence new vaccines. Breastfeeding is not a replacement. Oh, no, perish the thought of a replacement for the cancer-causing and... I was just going to say one thing, but there's so many more. Cancer, asthma, all kinds of deficiencies, ADHD, fill in the blank of your mystical disease, and of course the big old elephant in the room, autism, all of which the medical mafia would have you believe there is no vaccine connection. So I'm going to just continue to toe that company line and say, well, these bigots need to shut up about breastfeeding and need to get on board with more vaccines, because we're just not getting enough. Let's move on. Oh, this is coming from Breitbart.com. Two illegal aliens accused of gang raping 13-year-old North Carolina girl. Oh, you guessed it. It was more from the formerly great state of North Carolina. Two teenagers arrested months ago for allegedly raping a 13-year-old girl in Chapel Hill, oh boy, North Carolina, are, you want to say it with me, class? Illegal aliens. Breitbart News has confirmed. Alan Rafael Cardenas del Cid, an 18-year-old illegal alien, and Jose Kevin Ortiz Torres, a 19-year-old illegal alien, were arrested in April after police said they had allegedly raped a 13-year-old girl in the park. And it just goes on. So, yeah. Nothing to see here, folks. Keep embracing the diversity. And speaking of embracing the diversity, you should also embrace Nike. Nike celebrates celebrates oppression of women, promotes hijab ballers, quote unquote, in new ad. And this is coming from the GatewayPundit.com, from Christina Lila, June 3rd, 2019. It's got an image there and everything. Nike Toronto celebrated the oppression of women in a new ad by promoting hijab ballers. Oh boy, I'm just enthralled with glee. Don't change who you are. Change the world, says Nike, as it promotes Sharia law. So, enslave the entire world under Sharia law? Question mark. Well, of course that's what they want. What do you think? Have you even taken a glance at their so-called religion? And definitely so-called religion of peace. Are you kidding me, folks? Yeah. So the promo ad here says just that. Don't change who you are, change the world. And it's got several, all, I would assume, women, but I know that's very sexist to say. And who could tell when you're wearing a partial beekeeper outfit? Nonetheless, they've all got their little hijabs on, and they're just hanging out. And these are the quote-unquote ballers, I guess, that Nike is promoting here in more of their lovely indoctrination campaign. And I posted this. I think I retweeted this. that people should boycott Nike, but what I added to it is that everyone should have already boycotted Nike. I can't imagine. And don't get me wrong, I got Nikes under my bed somewhere too, but they're not not my mainstay shoes. Nonetheless, yeah, I think it's high time everyone stopped paying for their own demise. So I find it particularly humorous that the athletes are always the ones pushing this whole slavery agenda. Slavery, slavery, slavery. Reparations for slavery. We were all oppressed. Oh, those evil, white, racist, conservative. Slavery, slavery, slavery. Let's talk more about slavery. But it's quite ironic and stupid that these same folks are primarily endorsing, sponsored by, and at the very least wearing, what folks? Nikes. Oh yeah, I mean that's like the primary brand of every sport here in America. So whether it's baseball or basketball and so forth and so on, it's Nike, 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 Nike. All of your big name athletes are just can't wait to buy into Nike. And these are going to be the same clowns pushing the slavery narrative again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Yeah, slavery, slavery, slavery. But the irony is that while you're wearing your Nikes and your Nike shoes and your shirt and your jacket and your pants and Nike everywhere you can possibly imagine, I wonder where all that could be made. Let me think. Is Nike made here in America by American workers that are actually getting paid a livable wage under good conditions? No. Where might Nike be made primarily? Let's think about that and ponder it for a bit. Could it be the Chi-Coms that are making these products primarily? Yeah, Asia. I wonder what their work conditions are like. I wonder if any of these dribbling buffoons have looked into this at all. Because we're so quick to talk about slavery. And here's the funny irony of it. It's always slavery and it's always deplorable and horrible, I guess. Unless you're getting your stuff from slave factories. You guessed it. Nike, Sony, all the big name brand. I mean, Nike, obviously the one I'm talking about here. Pretty much everything you're going to buy at your big box store. Everything you're going to buy from your big box stores doesn't come from here. Apple, Windows, whatever unit you want to use, I can almost guarantee you it's not coming from here. It's coming from, yeah, slave labor in China. Bingo, ding, 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 ding. And Southeast Asia, to a lesser extent, really provides a lot of the clothing from your big box stores too. So if you're going to one of those places where all the people look like, let's just be nice, zombies. Yeah, the clothing that you're paying a pretty decent price for is coming from slave factories somewhere. But slavery's all right as long as it's somewhere else, out of sight, out of mind. Right, athletes? It must be, because you're sponsored by one of the largest people doing it. I digress just a bit, folks. Let's take a little short walk, shall we? And we will talk to our first guest in a mere matter of moments. And by first today, I actually mean only guest. I'm so used to saying that we have more than one guest. But for today's episode, we just have one. We'll speak to David Clues from Unity News Network in a mere matter of moments. Stick around. We are definitely very pleased to have on the program today Mr. David Clues, all the way from the UK, way across the pond. So he'll be talking to us today about all things Unity News Network. Before we get into that, David Clues is the leading correspondent for the UNN, the Unity News Network, with over 15 years of political experience and a wealth of social media and communication skills. David gets to the heart of what is really important to real people in the UK. And now, real people in the US.
He sounds really interested in this guy. Who is he?
I know. I'm excited to speak with you, man. I'm very excited because that's what we're trying to get to the heart of here in the U.S. too. Because a lot of this stuff
here just now.
Yeah, we're not getting a lot of this news, I don't think.
Yeah, he's over here just now on a full state visit. He's having a great time.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're a little bit new to our audience, or at least some of us probably. So give us a little bit about yourself and a little bit what you're doing, the Unity News Network and so forth.
Well, I've been involved in and around politics for, as I said, for years. Always found it very interesting. I was quite heavily involved in the referendum for Scottish independence. Mm-hmm. I was opposed to independence, I believe, in the United Kingdom. And then in the 2016 referendum, I supported Brexit. So I was a supporter of Brexit. After that, I don't know whether your viewers will be aware, but we were supposed to have been leaving the EU, but we haven't. It's been a bit of a farce. And I set up a campaign called Unity, which was to campaign for Brexit. And then during that, around about a year ago, I realised there was a huge disconnect between the people and the mainstream media. And myself and my colleague, Carol Pearson, founded Unity News Network, or UNN, and we're one of the fastest growing alternative news outlets now in the UK. We've got about 100,000 followers on Facebook. We've got an app, YouTube as well, YouTube channel, Twitter, everything. We've got a new studio that we broadcast from. So the UK is always usually about 10 or 15 years behind America. And I know alternative media guys like yourself, John, is huge. So it's really starting to develop here in the UK as well.
Yeah, that's definitely great news. I feel like it's a necessary evil in this sort of political climate we live in on both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, it's so heavily censored and so little real news is getting out there. I mean, that's why I was so excited to speak with you, because I feel like most of the folks in America, they get little bits and pieces, and sadly a lot might get the Fox News synopsis or, God forbid, the CNN, but you're actually living it. You're there in the United Kingdom and firsthand sort of seeing what's taking place.
And one of the things we are trying to do is, one of the gaps we see on the market, and I've looked at your content as well, John, it's very interesting, is you've either got like CNNs of this world, and then on the other hand, you've got these sort of hyper-partisan alternative news outlets. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we do have a bias. We're pro-Brexit, but we're just trying to sort of straddle somewhere in the middle. So, you know, try and give people the facts as best we can without over embellishing it, which can be easily done, but we're just trying. You know, tonight to your viewers, I'll try and tell you exactly what's going on and with the facts, and if I'm giving an opinion, I'll tell you as well so that you can differentiate between the two.
Sure, by all means. Well, I know you sort of led off with Donald Trump's visit over there. Well, we see a lot of the the stuff. I'm trying not to think of the guy's name. The gentleman with the big balloon and all these protests. And then you see sort of this, the inverse of it. You're saying, oh, but there's all these other crowds of people that are really happy he's there and seeing good stuff. What are you seeing there on the ground, so to speak?
What is happening on the ground is Donald Trump is visiting London. London is a very metropolitan city. It's a very multicultural city. Very, you know, sort of liberal left wing. So it's only because he's visiting London, you're going to get a lot of people out on the streets protesting against him. However, most of the polls indicate that the majority of British people are happy for President Trump to be here. You look at the comments that we've got on our social media, and a lot of people actually like Donald Trump. So this notion that he's hated by everyone in Britain is not true. And a great deal of that hatred will again come from the way the mainstream media portrays President Trump. I mean, I wouldn't say I identify with the Republican Party. I definitely don't identify with the Democratic Party just now in America, the way they've gone. But, you know, it's just the total untruths that are being told about Trump. And I mean, they're trying to make out he's this far right racist. You know, we know that's not true.
Yeah, I mean,
his
right
policies
there.
Unite. Sorry, on you go.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel pretty much right there with you. I, as a kid growing up, I never identified with either one. And then as I got older, I was just like you were saying, I never for once identified with the Democrat Party once I really figured out what was going on. And then as I grew older, I was like, oh, well, this is nuts. But yeah, there is this real polarization going on. I mean, the media really plays on that, or the mainstream media, I think, really plays on these two sort of reflex emotions. You're either this or you're that. It's like the wrestling or the boxing battle royal they've got to play up.
And you know, we get a lot of news about America. I mean, America's obviously, it's the center of the world. You know, we have the shared language. You used to be one of our former colonies, so we're still quite interested in you.
That's true.
You know, you see even here the polarization of debate, you know, how far left the Democrats have gone versus, you know, middle America. And it's the same in the UK. You've got these really radical left-wing groups now that are just totally out with sort of mainstream everyday people. And it's so similar. We've both got the issues around, you know, illegal immigration as well. We've got so much in common on these topics.
So I guess bottom line is it's not as bad as the media portrays it to be as far as this polarization. No. Perhaps in London, no. But I mean, I think you'd get the same sort of reaction if you went to New York or San Francisco.
100%. To give your viewers an analogy, it would be like Donald Trump visiting San Francisco.
Yeah. Good grief.
Seeing how he got on there. And most people, again, would respect the office of the president. They don't like the fact that he's being disrespected by some politicians. And the fact that he's over as well, remembering the D-Day landings of 75 years ago when it was Americans and British together who left from across the English Channel. So, yeah, mainstream media will tell you everyone hates him. I'd say it's probably 25% hate him, 25% love him, and the other 50%, well, life goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I know London's the lair of Sadiq Khan, so, I mean, I guess that's got to be a huge polarization there, no matter what.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about all this is Sadiq Khan is trying to deflect from his numerous failures as the mayor of London, you know, knife crime, acid attacks, grooming gangs. I mean, I think there is a perception in America that London is this lawless place, and it's not. There are parts of it that are, you know, very, very dangerous, but not unlike any other major city. But with Khan, him and Trump, you know, they don't like each other, and yeah, but Khan is not popular out with London. He's hated out with London.
Mm-hmm. So what's the reality of all these attacks? Because I try to stay more on the social media than the mainstream media, because at least I feel like, you know, I get a presence like yourself and other folks in the UK and Britain and so forth. And I see it as like, wow, there's a lot of dark stuff going on. The knife attacks, the acid attacks, and just the influx of... I just sort of see it as a culture war. I mean, it's a culture clash, because you've got folks that are totally, utterly different culture, and they're invading a homeland of people with an opposite culture. So
it's interesting. A great deal of the crime is actually fueled by middle class drug usage.
Oh, really?
It's quite underreported. So a lot of the stabbings is between like black on black gangs, so African gangs who are predominantly involved in the cocaine trade, which is with middle class white people who take cocaine. So it's a very incestuous thing. So, you know, people have come over from immigrant backgrounds. London's a very expensive city. You know, how can you get rich quick when you get into the drugs game? And then obviously they're bringing over tactics and techniques that are more common in Africa, you know, stabbing people. And it's the same with like Asian gangs as well, like the subcontinent, India and Pakistan, where like acid attacks are a form of shaming. And these have found their way into the UK. And what it is in the UK is we've always had people come from the former Commonwealth, former empire countries like India, Pakistan and Africa. But over the last 20 years, it's just been like open borders, no controls over who's coming in and out. And you know, poll after poll of the majority of people in Britain say they don't want this to continue. And it's worrying how the politicians are just letting it continue.
Good grief. I didn't realize the drug issue was such an issue, because that's definitely something I never see in the mainstream media. It's always just influx of primarily Muslims throwing acid on unsuspecting British people.
Well, yeah, and that's maybe where you've got, I think, maybe a slightly false view from the alternative media as well. The reality is it's a complex mixture of what is going on. And in the acid attacks is a thing in certain cultures that if someone, you know, debases you or attacks your person, like you're allowed to throw acid on them, and it's terrible. You know, it's a brutal thing to do. And then, as I said, the knife crime is primarily African black gangs, black on black attacks. So it's mostly young black males who are dying in these stabbings and shootings as well. And have you ever been over to London, John?
I have not.
No. So if you come to London, you've got like the centre, which is, you know, stunning. It's really wealthy. You know, there's no Londoners live in London. There's no British people or English people live there. It's too expensive now to live in London. So you've got mostly Russians, Arabs and Chinese live in central London. And then if you go out a wee bit further, like your sort of Tower Hamlets, your Lewishams and places in the north, you've got quite poor areas. And that's mostly people from, you know, more ethnic backgrounds. And then if you go out even further, that's where like the sort of white flight is taking place into the extreme suburbs or even all new regions altogether of London.
Sadly, it's sort of a similar narrative here in the States, I think. There's a lot of that same sort of situation, especially in the D.C. area. It's always just sort of, nobody lives in D.C. They all live in McLean, Virginia, or the surrounding suburbs. But, man, I didn't realize it was that bad there in London as well.
Yep. And you've got really bad housing shortages now in the southeast of England, because everybody that comes to Britain wants to live in the southeast of England. They want to live around the London area, and housing is just so expensive, and you know, to get a well-paid job is hard. So, you know, we're inviting all these people into our country, and you know, all we're saying is, look, you can come, you can get minimum wage jobs, and it disproportionately benefits the wealthy of this country. It's exactly the same as America. You know, your blue-collar Democrats, your people that have gone back to the Republicans and Trump, your miners, your steel people, they are just, that's who voted for Brexit. It's genuinely exactly the same as what's going on in America.
Yeah, I definitely see a lot of parallels. I didn't realize there were this many similarities, especially with the drug
100%.
Issue.
100%. Well, if you think about it, you know, a great deal of the cross-border problems you have is because of cartels in Mexico, isn't it? And
yeah.
And, you know, they're the people smuggling. There's a lot of criminality taking place. And, you know, I think, as I said, most British people would say that, you know, having people coming from other countries, a bit like America, has been a good thing. You know, it's people come, they work hard, they contribute. But
sure.
The fact that it's gone on for so long, the fact that it's uncontrolled, the fact that you've got criminals, you're not checking their backgrounds, it just can't continue. And that's where, you know, the mainstream media portray Trump as this demagogue who just wants to shut America off, when what he's actually saying is there are bad people crossing the border in from Mexico. You know, surely you want to stop that from happening. And most people in the UK would say we want the same here. We want our borders. We're an island. We should be. For us. But it's just the political class are so removed from the British people. And Brexit is the big one, because, you know, that's what people voted Brexit because they want to take back control. That was the big slogan. Take back control of immigration was a huge issue of, you know, draining the swamp. That's another phrase we've got over here as well, of the corrupt politicians. Also, you know, like your multinational corporations as well. Because I know there's a big issue in America as well. You've got all these like big multinationals whereas an economy is built through small to medium businesses and entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of been crushed over the last 15, 20 years, you know, at the expense of big business.
We're seeing the same thing here where it's, I guess, sort of the heyday of shopping malls. Here in America, you had these large shopping malls, and their late 70s, 80s was like the pinnacle of these big monuments of consumerism. And now you're seeing Amazon and the Walmarts really just sort of intentionally or unintentionally shut those down. So where you've got these big crumbling structures with four or five businesses that have really become these havens for crime and sort of youths that have nothing better to do than wander around the mall and get into a lot of delinquency. So
That's right. You know, it's very, very interesting, the parallels. And the UK does have a lot of issues underneath the surface that are bubbling. You know, especially within, you know, there's tensions within the British population and the Muslim populations. I think, again, alternative media kind of overplays the reality of that. But there are certain places in the UK that are, you know, there's just no integration at all. You've got places where, you know, the people will speak Arabic. They've not. And when like people first came to Britain from, say, Pakistan and India, they integrated well. You know, they spoke the language. They did it. Whereas you've got these new communities coming in who don't integrate, who are perhaps even more extreme in their doctrine. There's been a really interesting thing in a place called Birmingham. Well, you'll know Birmingham, Alabama, sure. And Birmingham, UK, where a group of Muslim parents have been protesting about LGBT teaching of their kids. And what's very interesting about it is people who are normally on the right or more right-wing are actually agreeing with these Muslim parents over it. There's a big culture clash is taking place, and people are worried about, you know, obviously Islamic extremism, terrorism, and, you know, these parallel communities that are growing up.
I think that's probably one of the biggest issues, is that there's no assimilation in both sides of the Atlantic. You know, here in America, we have this influx of illegal immigration from the south of the border. And a lot of people think, oh, it's just Mexico and Nicaragua and so forth. But there's, you know, there's a lot of Middle Eastern, there's a lot of North African. And the biggest issue, I think, with most Americans isn't that they're here, it's that they're here illegally. And then there's no assimilation factor. It's this, we're going to be our own enclave and just take the benefits and not speak the language nor any customs. And it's just...
It's just not possible anymore. And you can be anti-immigration without being anti-immigrant, you know, and that's a point I always always try and stress, is that, look, if someone said to me, if you walk for 1,000 miles, you can go and you can get a lifestyle 30 times better than yours and you can get it for nothing. I mean, most people would say, of course. So politicians, both here and in the US, have and across Europe have failed people on immigration, because they've said to people in these poorer countries, look, yeah, come on over, we'll look after you, we'll feed you, everything will be wonderful. And then they've said to the people that are living here, look, it's going to be great, you're going to become enriched and everything's going to be wonderful and we'll all live in peace and harmony. And it's not, it's just been a disaster, and people are waking up to it now.
I don't know if you're getting the same narrative from your politicians, but... aside from Trump, most of them keep saying, well, these immigrant populations are going to do jobs that that American people won't do anymore. That's sort of this narrative we keep hearing. And I'm going, well...
Yeah, and it's not true.
Yeah, who was getting it done before? Because...
Correct. And what it is a lot of the time, it's for a lot of these big multinational corporations to be able to suppress wages for people. And it is a huge, huge, huge issue, and especially in Europe, where the boats were coming across the Mediterranean from Libya, and you know, a lot of these problems actually have started because of British and American foreign policy as well. You know, we got involved in all these stupid wars in the Middle East. You know, Libya. I mean, you know, when Gaddafi was in charge of Libya, You know, nobody was doing it was these countries need strong men to run them.
True.
You know, it's interesting as well. There's even in the Middle East, like Egypt is a country. Egypt is the largest Arab country in Africa, Arab speaking country. Egyptians on the whole don't actually tend to emigrate because they have a culture of staying in Egypt, you know, trying to rebuild it and trying to make it good. But they're also ruled, you know, by strong rulers. Whereas now, with what happened in Libya, with what happened in Iraq, with what happened in Syria, it's just, it's caused an absolute mess. And I think the West have been very naive, you know, thinking, oh, we'll just turn these countries into democracies and, you know, they'll stop bombing us. And I think Trump, and that's the one thing people forget about Donald Trump. Donald Trump hasn't taken us to war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every previous president, Clinton, Obama, Bush, you know, all went to war, whereas Trump hasn't. But they hate him. So my question is, why? He's against war. He stopped a war with Russia as well, but they hate him. Why?
Yeah, and North Korea. He's pretty much quelled that issue down. So.
Yeah. So it's the craziness of these sort of hard leftists that just don't see the bigger picture. They just think, oh, Trump, and we'll hate him. It's just, it's crazy.
Do you think there's sort of the silent majority there in the UK, as it sort of appears to be in the US? The crazed millennials, and I wish I'd have kept this up in a way, but I'm glad I didn't in another way. But I was looking at Twitter right before we spoke, and there was a post from, I wish I could think of the lady's name. It was some economics professor somewhere in the UK that was totally nude and wrote something on her body regarding women's rights or something. And it was this sort of video to President Trump, and I was just sitting there laughing and sort of grossed out as well. So,
it is the same. It is these sort of universities, it's these elites that are just removed from everyday people and the reality, and they're the ones that speak the loudest. But I mean, that's why, as I said, that's why Brexit happened. You know, the silent majority of people in the UK said, no, we want things to change.
Could you touch a little bit on the Brexit issue? Because to be honest with you, I kept up with it pretty well, but it wasn't until the first vote, I think over a year ago now, there's a friend of mine that is a manager of a store here in Wilmington that I talked to, and he's from Liverpool. But we just got off talking about the Brexit issues one day, and he was just kept railing off all this insanity that was pretty much caused by the European Union that I didn't even really gather until I spoke with him. Regarding economic issues, and that you couldn't buy something from this country because you'd have to pay this outlandish tax on it, and just total insanity.
The problem with the European Union is, I can't remember, that I think there is only four countries who actually net contribute money to the EU. So you've got 28 countries within the European Union, but only like Britain, France, Germany and Italy actually are net contributors. So the UK pays the EU $12 billion a year to be a member of the EU. So that's one of the big arguments. We leave the EU, we save $12 billion. On the trade issue, there's this thing called the customs union, which means that you have to buy internally from within the EU market. So you can't buy from African countries or Asian countries these products if it's being made in Europe. Where we are now with Brexit is we were supposed to have left the EU on the 29th of March, but Parliament, the UK Parliament, couldn't get a deal that they would agree on. So most polling of most people want to see what's called a no-deal Brexit, which is where we just put our hands up and say, right, we're leaving, just walk away. And that's what most people want now. But Parliament, which is full of MPs who voted to remain in the EU, are trying to thwart the will of the people. And that's where you've got this huge imbalance taking place. And it doesn't look, well, as things stand, we're leaving the EU on the 31st of October. And that's the next extension. And I think if we don't leave on the 31st of October, then, you know, everything will change in the UK politically.
Hmm. What do you think the recourse will be, I guess, amongst the people if this doesn't happen in October?
Well, do you know Nigel Farage?
I do, yeah.
So he set up the Brexit Party now, which is, you know, very well named, simply to deliver a proper Brexit. If we don't leave, I would imagine that the Brexit Party will sweep away the Conservative Party and become the new dominant force in UK politics. I mean, you could potentially see Nigel Farage as Prime Minister if they don't deliver Brexit properly.
That would be amazing. I feel there would be a huge party perhaps on both sides of the ocean there.
yeah, there would. And if you'd have asked me this even 2 months ago, I would have laughed at you and said, look, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
But now I genuinely think if we're not out of the EU on the 31st of October and there's a general election, I think the Conservative Party in the UK is pretty finished anyway, because they're just useless. And even the Labour Party now, it's the same in America. The Labour Party have embraced identity politics. Now, my politics are probably more in line with the Labour Party. I'm not really a free marketeer. I'm not into a lot of American-type policies. But the Labour Party have embraced this identity politics. They've gone so hard left on social issues. Even like working-class people just couldn't bring themselves to vote for Labour now. It's a bit like the Democrats, you know. You know, they've brought in these abortions and just after birth. I mean, that's just disgusting.
I know. Thank you. I don't understand where the logic is with, you know, with this stuff that keeps trickling down the pipe here. I'm thinking every day I think, okay, and now we're going to see a million people in the street of D.C. or every major city going, this is too much. This is insanity. What are we doing here? But
yeah, I mean, that is so extreme, that policy of the Democrats to allow abortion up until then. I mean, the limit in the UK is 22 weeks, which, in my opinion, is still too high.
Sure.
You know, I understand there's a lot of emotion on it, but I think, you know, my position would be is that abortion should be available in certain instances, like rape, incest, but only as a last resort for women if their life's in danger. But you look at what has happened in America, where the Democrats have gone, in my opinion, just, it's disgusting. You know, these third trimester abortions, it really, really is. It's disgusting.
I really thought New York, their latest law, where, like you were saying, it's basically a post-birth abortion they're calling for. I mean, I really thought we would see some action on that one, but...
But I don't know what your position is on abortion, because, you know, some people regard abortion as murder, you know, as soon as a child is conceived.
Sure.
But, you know, to go from that argument to then a post-birth, it's honestly, it's disgusting. It really, really is. And, you know, the craziness of these people and, you know, how anybody, any sort of just normal, decent, working person could vote Democrat now in America is just beyond me.
Oh, yeah, I feel you. I'm right there with you on that abortion topic, and I don't understand it either, how anyone in their right mind. I will say I'm pretty close to university, and it's, you know, it's like a whole separate world. I always say once you enter the gates, it's like entering into this weird, bizarre, everything is inverted reality where... it's all about feelings and jobs don't matter and money doesn't matter. It's so bizarre. Yeah.
The perception we have of America is, though, it's extremes. You know, there isn't, and it's the polarization. Whereas, you know, you even look at the Democrats under Bill Clinton or the party of Kennedy, you know, the Democrats have moved so far away from that vision now. And What they're just doing what the Labour Party are doing, winning that multicultural vote in cities, the student vote. But that's never going to be enough to win. I mean, I think Trump will win in 2020 out of the ballpark. I think Trump's going to easily be re-elected in 2020.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, to your point, I think it's exactly what you were saying going on here. It's just this continuation of division where they try to play the race card and the sex or gender card and everything. And yeah, they keep thinking, if we just get enough illegal immigrants in and somehow allow them to vote, then we'll win. Because I think they've sort of given up on the black vote because I think too many of the people in that demographic are awake to what's going on. So
yeah, and it's just it's crazy politics. It really, really is. And as I said, that's the problem for the Labour Party in the UK, is most sort of left wing, most sort of working class people, blue collar people, want tough action on immigration. They're not pro, they are pro equality, but not to the extent a lot of these lobbyists and people are doing. And they're so far removed from reality for everyday working families. And as I said, we're 10 years behind where America is now in terms of that polarization, but it's brewing.
Yeah. I sort of fear that we're going to have the same sort of Muslim backlash that you guys are experiencing here if we don't get a better handle on that sort of situation.
I think the problem as well is with the in the Muslim areas is when there's no integration and when there is no sense of loyalty to the country that you're in. And a lot of that as well is cultural. So it actually depends on which Islamic country the people are coming from. You know, people who tend to come from like Indonesia, for example, actually integrate, even though they're Muslims, they integrate very well. But the problems tend to come from people from, you know, maybe sub-Saharan Africa and like Pakistan, Afghanistan, and these places. So it's actually a great deal more, it's a cultural thing as well. Because I know in Minnesota, obviously, the Ilhan Omar, it's a lot of Somalians, isn't it, are now there?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And they're notoriously, you know, pretty extreme on a lot of issues. You know, they're not moderate at all. And you know, that's where, I think on the issue of Muslims and Islam, that I think, you know, you have to break it down a wee bit deeper. There's big divisions. You know, there's like massive extremists, then there's moderates. But I think, you know, the problem as well in the UK is we used to be a Christian country. We're not a Christian country anymore. You know, we've lost that ethos.
Yeah, that's very disturbing. That's what I fear is going to happen here. I fear the same thing. I know you were saying you guys seem to be a few years behind in that regard, and I fear that we're a few years behind as far as what's going to happen with the huge influx of more violent Muslims and just sort of the continued degradation of the Christian faith within the country. That's a huge concern.
If Christianity was strong and, you know, people were rallying around that, I don't think we would have the concern about these issues. But it's just the fact that, you know, the Christianity, the leaders that we have are just so weak. Mm-hmm. And they're so not willing to stand up for Christian values. But it's honestly, as I pointed to earlier, it is very interesting, though, because you've got this issue of a lot of people are agreeing with some of the Muslim rhetoric on things like equal rights, because their own politicians have just moved so far away from normality. They've become so left-wing, yeah, and so extreme.
That is crazy. You know,
it is. And it's about trying to get back to, you know, Christian values in your country and family and creating a better and fairer country for everyone that's currently here. That's just my take on it.
Oh, yeah. I think that's what we have to do. I mean, going back to what you were saying about them sort of commemorating the D-Day landing and so forth, I think in both countries, that's what really pulled us together. I know your country experienced so much more Nazi bombing and just total destruction of your infrastructure. But I think at the core, you still had those unifying principles of Christianity and the culture, the United Kingdom, like, you know, to get back to your point, the Ireland, yeah, Scotland, and so forth, Wales.
And family as well, that's right. And you know, I'm Scottish, you know, and I'm a unionist. I believe in keeping the UK together. But it's everything's changing, and it's changing so quickly, and it'll be interesting to see how things progress. I think you were going to ask about the Gilets Jaunes in France as well, weren't you? The yellow vest, because,
oh yeah, okay.
You mentioned that. I thought, so do you guys see much of that over there in France, in America, about the protest against Macron?
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. Like, the mainstream media never touches it, I feel like, but I see a lot more on social media, and I'm notorious for posting and just sort of rubbing it in America's face and going, hey, these people at least are doing something. Like, I don't know exactly if it's to a good end or a bad end, but at least they're getting out in the street and showing that they're displeased with the trajectory of the nation, so...
Thing is that we've got to remember though they're French.
Yeah, that's
French,
true.
They do like a good revolution, and they are pretty quick to go out and start striking and protesting about things. But where this has come from is it initially started as a fuel tax. Mm-hmm. So like Macron wanted to cut carbon emissions, and it ended up hitting like average everyday people really, really hard. And they just said, look, we can't live anymore with these taxes. And everybody in France has to have a yellow vest in their car if their car breaks down, if there's an accident. So what was they did? They all started wearing these gilets jaunes, the yellow vests. And then it's just grown and it's grown and it's grown. And now a lot of it is just totally anti-Macron. Everybody hates Macron now, even like extreme left-wingers, extreme right-wingers. They just despise him because he represents that globalist... open borders, you know, no empathy. You know, he's just like a manager. He just makes decisions. You know, no empathy. And you know, France has got huge issues as well in terms of, you know, you've got these ghettos of predominantly North African places. That is bad. You know, there's cars being burned there every night. I mean, the French police are notoriously aggressive as well. And I mean, France is like a melting pot and a tinder pot ready to go off as well. And people see that and it worries them, especially in the cities. You know, Paris, Marseille is huge. And you've got these young, angry youths, especially in the North Africans. And again, they came to France and they were told, well, there'll be plenty of jobs for you. There'll be a really good life. And it's not happened for them. And, you know, I'm not condoning their behaviour, but... you know, they're like, well, there's no future for me here, so what else am I meant to do? I'm just going to turn to crime.
Jeez. That's sad.
Yeah, it is, and that's my point about not blaming the immigrant, but the policy of the government. You know, telling people, yeah, come on over, there's loads of benefits, everything's fine, and there isn't. The world doesn't work like that. You know, and there needs to be a move to say to people, look, you know, rebuild your own countries. You know, again, that's the problem with most of these people that are coming over as immigrants are men of 20 to 40. They're not, it's not women and families, and you just don't know who's coming.
Yeah.
No idea.
Are you guys experiencing the same sort of things? In the U.S. press, they refer to them as no-go zones in parts of Europe and France where basically anyone of... I guess Caucasoid or local descent isn't really, I won't say permitted to go, but they don't go if they have any sense.
No, they won't. And I think where that comes from is there is this just feeling that, you know, if you're a native or if you're white or you're there, you're obviously rich, you've had everything handed to you on a plate. You know, there's that, there's that anger.
Yeah.
It's just there. And these no-go zones definitely exist in parts of Belgium, in parts of Paris and Marseille. Sweden now is really, really bad. And you've got these ultra-liberal politicians who just don't want to cause offence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and instead of just saying, look, if you're a bad person, you go to jail or you get deported.
Yeah.
And we need to stop allowing everybody. In my opinion, it's not even a question of left and right. It's a question of sensible and being a wimp.
Exactly.
You've got to make tough decisions, you know, and you can't take the whole world's problems on your shoulders.
Are you seeing that sort of thing in the UK as far as these no-go zones, or is it just primarily sort of the Europe
continent? You do, and you don't. I mean, there are parts of the UK, you know, that are predominantly, you know, you know Muslim backgrounds, and you would maybe, I think you would probably be all right if you went into them, but you wouldn't go in there voluntarily. You know, these types of areas have always existed.
Oh yeah.
I don't think there's any point in having this halcyon vision, but it's definitely a lot worse now than it was, and it is in certain areas. especially in like the north of England as well. And it's interesting. Like I take it you've seen all the stuff about grooming gangs and things like that.
Yeah, that's particularly disturbing. That's something I probably we couldn't talk enough about. That's so reprehensible. Where you've got these young women and girls getting raped and abused. That's just so
terrible.
Disgusting.
It's terrible. And where that's what's interesting. See a lot of the people. It's like second and third generation immigrants. So their parents maybe came to Britain in the 60s or 70s. And, you know, they've lived here and they kind of look down on like English girls, Northern English girls as pieces of dirt, as pieces of meat. And they've been raped, they've been abused. And it's disgusting. But the worst part of it is the way the police and the government just kind of turned a blind eye to it because they were scared of being called racist. And that's been the worst part of it. And it's also been girls from poorer backgrounds. You know, and if it had been girls from richer backgrounds, I'm sure everybody would have been going crazy. But it's been poor girls who are vulnerable and they've been abused. But it's disgusting that went on and it still goes on as well today. You know, it's really, really disturbing.
So most of the people perpetrating these crimes are second or third generation? Or most of them.
Second, third generation Pakistanis.
Jeez.
And it's how did that culture develop? That's the question you have to ask. How was it allowed to happen? You know, some people would say, oh well, the Quran allows it, or some people would say that it's there. But I think there's much wider and bigger issues around that of class. And poverty and also desperation. So, you know, that's where, again, I say to your viewers, on these issues, you'll sometimes get a slightly, I'm not saying biased, but you'll get, look, this is what Muslim men are doing to your children. And what I'm actually trying to say is there's some truth in that, but it's not the full truth. There's bigger elements to it. And a failing of the authorities, a failing of politicians, a failing of the police to get involved and to make tough decisions for fear of being called racist. You know, and I know that's a huge thing in America.
Oh yeah.
You know, you're a white person, you're so scared of, you know, you just use the race card and that's exactly. And the big one in the UK is anybody with a slightly different view is known as far right. You know, that's the new one, or they're a fascist or a Nazi. And it's, you know, we're just trying to have an intelligent debate about these issues. You know, because if you don't, it's just going to drive them underground. It's actually going to drive people to even more extremes. You know, and they're going to see what's going on. And I would like to think that in the majority of these communities where their own people have raped these young girls, they would be ostracized. But there's definite problems in like Oldham, Rochdale, Rotherham, and they're still not being solved yet. And a lot of people just bury their head in the sand about them.
Wow. That's so unfortunate. I know you mentioned that you were from Scotland. Is there a difference from, I guess, England, the mainland, versus Wales, Scotland, and so forth?
We don't have the issues as much of the mass immigration that's taken place into England over the last 20 years.
Gotcha.
In Scotland... Glasgow has got quite multicultural, but not at the level of the rest of the UK. And the kind of immigrant communities are actually much better integrated here. So there is elements of it, but not to the extent of the southeast of England, like London area and the parts of the northern England. So there's small bits of it, but not nearly on the scale of parts of England.
Well, speaking of getting labeled the far-right extremist, what's going on with Tommy Robinson? Do you have any insight on that? As far as what we get, you know, it sounds pretty ridiculous and crazy, but I haven't kept up with his sort of ongoing story in a couple of days. So,
Tommy is not everyone's cup of tea. Right? I'll be the first to say that. When Tommy went to prison, we thought it was ridiculous the way he was imprisoned. And went to prison. So we fully supported him with the campaign to get him out. But you know, on a personal level, I disagree with some of Tommy's, the way he speaks and the way and his tactics.
Sure.
I don't agree with the way he sometimes goes about things. I think the problem, as I've said earlier, I think there's a lot of problems that have much deeper issues. And Tommy sometimes just looks a bit, I've never met him, I've seen him, but I've never met him.
Sure.
I think he just looks a bit too, he tries to paint it as very black and white. But at the moment, he's getting tried again for this contempt of court. And it's a joke. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. It's a joke. He's also been banned off Facebook. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, he banned off Facebook. He got put off YouTube. Well, he's still on YouTube. His stuff's severely limited. And, you know, Tommy Robinson, as I said, people, he's not everyone's cup of tea. But is he a far-right Nazi extremist? No, he's not.
Yeah.
And the way the mainstream media here portray him is not accurate. And that's what most people would probably see, and they would see through that. So he stood as a candidate up in the northwest of England as an MEP, and he actually won 40,000 votes, which actually wasn't that bad. But I think people are worried about him because he is a very charismatic individual, and people will follow him. But my argument is, if you disagree with someone, debate them, call them out. Don't just shut them up and hope they'll go away. Because you actually just make them bigger.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was most disturbed, where they sent him to jail for what seemed to be very ridiculous charges. Crazy. And then this accounts of them sort of trying to get his family and them having to move his family out of the country. That seems...
Listen, he does not, in my opinion, deserve the demonization he faces. He is definitely a controversial figure. He's definitely a polarizing figure. But does he deserve to be threatened with his life? No. Does he deserve to be labeled a Nazi? No.
Yeah.
Does his family deserve that treatment? No. And that's where, you know, most everyday people, you know, would probably agree with that. And the way the media do lie about him. Mm-hmm. And they try and smear him all the time. And what we try and do is we just try and report on what happens with Tommy just down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, though, he does play the game himself as well.
Sure.
He's not an angel. You know, he knows how to wind things up and how to create situations. But he only exists because of the failure of mainstream politicians to tackle the problems around Muslim integration, terrorism, and grooming gangs.
Yeah.
But my argument is, if Tommy Robinson, there's going to be people who will come along who are even more extreme than Tommy Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
If the government don't get their finger out and start addressing these issues and start stopping being worried about political correctness.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the grooming games thing is like the most nauseating. I can't. That's the sad thing, is I've seen and heard it so often that it's sort of just like, yeah, this exists. But it's so sick when you think about it.
The thing is, as well, there's always been paedophiles who have abused children, and they've always got together who have done it. But in this instance, it's the fact that the government and the communities and all these people were afraid of doing anything because it was mostly Muslim people from Pakistani backgrounds. And there is a major cultural and theological issue that is allowing that to take place. And it can't, you can't just bury your head in the sand. It's a bit like in the Catholic Church, the way all the priests were abusing children and everything. But they just buried their head in the sand about it and didn't acknowledge that there was a problem. And that's where, again, this culture of distrust and you know, again, when there's a terror attack, there feels as if there is this hypocrisy and double standards, that they're like, well, you know, that's what happens if you bomb the Middle East, and we're just dealing with what happens there all the time. When instead of saying, look, no, all terror is wrong, all indiscriminate killing is wrong.
Absolutely. I think the whole pedophilia thing definitely needs a big light on it. That's just so disturbing. I mean, I know you guys had the Jimmy Savile situation over there for years.
Well, he was covered up by the BBC, and they say he was Britain's worst paedophile, and Jimmy Savile was a necrophiliac.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
and he was an arch groomer, and everything that went on there, only positive to come out of it is I doubt these things would be allowed to happen anymore. That's the only positive, that people are more open. They are looking into it. But, you know, especially with these, the thing is as well, there's this culture, these girls that have been raped and groomed, they're maybe 12, 13, 14. And there's this, you know, a wee girl at 12, and these girls are maybe, as I said, there's this feeling that, well, they knew what they were doing, when no, they're still children.
Yeah, precisely.
You know, they were raped. You know, if you, and that's where it's disgusting. And as I said, it's, you know, it's, they've been sacrificed at the altar of like multiculturalism. Well, but that might affect community relations if we talk about it. Instead of just saying, look, it's wrong, and this is who's doing it, and we need to make sure it doesn't happen again.
That would make sense.
But this is the people want. I mean, people want straight talkers. You know, I am not Tommy Robinson. I am not these kind of figures. You know, these guys. But people are Donald Trump. But people want someone that is going to actually talk to these issues and understand what they're thinking. And that's why these figures are growing and so popular.
Is the censorship an issue? I mean, I know it must be. You got your own news program, but
yeah. Well, the censorship is an issue. I mean, on Facebook, you can't even mention Tommy Robinson's name without it being blocked. And even if it's negative about him, so it's crazy. And then you've got Twitter as well. So yeah, the censorship is a huge, huge issue. And my argument again is you're just driving the debate away, and what you're doing is you're creating echo chambers.
Yes.
So it's actually worse, because what happened was, like, all of like Tommy Robinson supporters all went and joined Telegram. Have you ever been on Telegram, which is the new social media app? It's Telegram. He's on that, and there's this other one called MeWe. And what happens is people form these bubbles. So like anybody who's a Tommy Robinson supporter is only friends with anyone else that's a Tommy Robinson supporter. Anyone that's an Antifa supporter is only friends with an Antifa supporter. So they all think the world looks like them. So with this banning, it's actually, and Jack Dorsey spoke about that, but then Twitter don't enforce it. They're so biased, it's unbelievable. And something needs to be done about big tech. It can't continue like this. And the fact that they're all headquartered in San Francisco, which we talked about earlier, the most liberal city on earth.
Oh, it's, you know, insane.
Because I've actually read a bit that says, like, Zuckerberg and Dorsey actually were quite pro free speech originally, but their staff are just like so hard left and extreme, and they can't kind of control them.
Yeah.
You know, so why isn't Twitter open up a moderation center in Texas?
Hey, that would be nice. I mean, I've probably belabored this point, but I was kind of new to the social media game before I got onto to my own show and stuff. Mm-hmm. But initially I tried to quote-unquote boost a post on Facebook, and they were fine with it until they realized that it was a Christian conservative guy that was my guest, and then they wanted my driver's license front and back scanned, proof of where I lived, proof of my phone number, and I was like, I'm not giving you guys this stuff. I'm not going to get drug out of my house at 3 a.m. because you guys didn't like something I posted on Facebook.
See, actually, I'm not defending Facebook or Twitter, but this has all come from politicians. It's all politicians. You know, you've seen the footage where they have the Senate hearings. They've done the same in the UK, where they're just like, well, why is this video allowed on YouTube? Why is this post allowed on Facebook? Why is this post allowed on Twitter? And they're just like, well, what do we do? So many politicians, this is a creation of the politicians, this censorship, and big tech's gone along with it. They've not actually stood up to it. So, you know, they need to be broken up, or there needs to be some form of free speech allowed, and to create a healthy conversation. Because if we don't, it's just going to drive people to more and more and more extremes, and it's not going to be healthy.
Yeah, I could not agree more. How did you get started with your own news outlet, Unity News Network?
We set up with a website, and then we got our social media going, and We just speak to people, and we just try and communicate with them. So we've got an app now as well. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to create as many of our own platforms to connect with people as possible, so as not to be reliant on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. I mean, obviously they're still the biggies, but yeah, we're doing fine. We're doing fine, and so people can subscribe on the app.
Thank you so much, David Clues, for joining us today. Make no mistake about it, you can find all of his information, Unity News Network, ukunity.org.uk. And if you missed any of that, if you're in the car at the gym or wandering about, you can look at anomicage.com and get all things David Clues, all things Unity News Network. So thank you so much, sir, for joining us. We'll have to speak again.
Thank you, John. Pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Be safe out there. As always, I want to thank everyone for joining us today on the Anomic Age. Please check out anomicage.com, where you can find everything about our guest, David Clues, his awesome organization, Unity News Network. You can also find all the information about our past guests, video links, audio links, downloads for the app, downloads for stuff about me. Everything can be found at anomicage.com. So please check it out. Share it with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. Hit the like buttons, hit the subscribe buttons, all of the above. Leave letters under people's doors. Put something in a copy machine and just let it roll. Anything you can do to help promote the program. Because as we mentioned with our guest a few weeks back, it's really going to have to be a DIY effort. It's got to be. Do it yourself. Yeah, that old punk rock ethos. If you're not party to it, you might need to think about looking into it. Because you really need to resurrect it, I believe. It's something that I just sort of take for granted, but many people don't. They sort of leave it to someone else to do. Whereas it's just sort of in my DNA to just do it. So if I don't know how to do it, I'm going to try to figure out how to do it. And probably spend way too long working on it instead of just giving it to someone else. It's really a pain for me to say, I need help. So I'm a real aficionado at trying to do it all yourself. Sometimes to a fault. But I digress. Please check out anomicage.com. Share the links. Thank you so much. Remember, you can't do everything, but you can do something. So, join us next week for another exciting guest and another trip into the Anomic Age. Be seeing you.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's anomicage.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go get some more money.